Russia's considerable military build-up is unjustified, unexplained, and deeply concerning. Russia must end this military build-up in and around Ukraine, stop its provocations, and de-escalate immediately.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Backstory. I'm Dana Lewis. That was Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, warning Russia away from Ukraine's borders. Ukrainian leaders say Russia has gathered close to 40,000 forces near Ukraine and might be planning to invade. Russia, in turn, accuses NATO of military activities that threaten Russia. Now, don't get confused here. Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014 and annexed the Crimean Peninsula. Annexed means took it from an independent country against the will of the government of Ukraine. It turned the clock back on Ukrainian independence and breached Ukraine's territorial integrity. And Russia funded and provided arms to so-called rebels in eastern Ukraine and helps keep a 7-year war there on a low simmer. Russia wants to be seen as a peacekeeper, but it appears to be anything but that, according to Western experts, funneling arms and even placing Russian commanders in the area of Ukraine known as the Donbass. What is Putin's intentions in former Soviet areas? Does he want to take them all back or just keep them from joining NATO? Because he thinks the near abroad, Russian neighbors, should serve the Kremlin. But Georgia and Ukraine and others want out from under Russia's thumb. And they are pressed harder as they try to join the European Union or NATO. On this backstory, Russia's view on its former Soviet republics and Putin's maneuvers in and around Ukraine, and how far is he prepared to go? Joining me from Moscow is Maxim Samoryakov, who is at the Carnegie Center in Moscow. Thank you for talking to us, Maxim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Look, you know, it's difficult to tell the Russian side of this story, and I'm not sure you can take us to that, but there is obviously a view from the Kremlin. If there is one reason for Russia massing troops on Ukraine's border, can you give it to me?
I can try. I think Russia wants to persuade Ukraine, first of all, and the United States as well, not to start a war. It's the way Russia, because I don't think that many people in the West realize that Russia sees the United States as a spoiler in this conflict, that Russia is genuinely afraid, Russia is genuinely concerned that Washington may push Kyiv into some reckless offense to start a war and to spoil as a result the relations, to make Russia intervene against Ukrainian army in help of the Donbas republics, and to spoil the relations between, further the relations between Russia and Europe, to have the pretext for new sanctions or and something like that. This is the view quite popular in Moscow.
It seems upside down to everything else we hear. Everything else we hear, Russia's massing troops on the border. Russia has occupied and illegally annexed the Crimea. Russia is sponsoring this, you know, so-called civil uprising and Russian rebels, Ukrainian Russian rebels in the east. Russia is the aggressor. Russia wants to retake the former Soviet Union and claim Ukraine as its, you know, near a far and sphere of influence. You say not, that actually Russia doesn't want to go any further than it has already.
I think the main Russian concern is not to get the hold of Ukraine, but rather to prevent its integration with NATO. And the Russian aims are far more limited than many believe.
But by threatening Ukraine, doesn't that in fact speed up any kind of track that Ukraine may have to NATO membership?
Oh, yes, that's a legitimate point of view, and I tend to agree with you. But still, from the Kremlin's point of view, it's that it wants to have some very strong guarantees that Ukraine won't be accepted to NATO. And the only guarantee the Kremlin can come up with is territorial conflict, because NATO does not accept countries with territorial conflicts.
You mean it won't accept Ukraine into NATO if there was a war going on?
Yeah. No, not just a war, a full-fledged war, but just some simmering territorial conflict in the periphery is also sufficient to prevent any NATO attempts to accept Ukraine into the alliance.
You've written about Ukrainian President Zelensky and his position at home, and you've made a pretty strong case that, Zelensky initially came to power promising peace and told Ukrainians he could solve this conflict that was bubbling and simmering on the border with Russia. He didn't do it. In the meantime, they've had COVID-19. The economy is what would be a polite term, is in the ditch. And he is looking for some kind of triumph and some kind of raison d'etre, reason for being. And that conflict with Russia, if he can throw some gasoline on the fire, may help him to some extent.
I'd say he's not looking for a conflict or for a triumph. It's too strong terms. I think he looks for legitimacy, for boosting his legitimacy inside Ukraine, because it's increasingly undermined by falling popularity. And it also, he has increasing rivalry on the side of other Ukrainian politicians. And he was almost ignored at the beginning of this year. We saw his opponents trying to make contacts with the West, bypassing him. And he had to react to that. He had to prove somehow that he's still a president, that he's still the one who takes decisions. And he managed to make that. He has proved at least that he's not afraid to make radical steps. Yeah, and he's capable of boosting, mobilizing the Western support for Ukrainian cause. He has proved these two important issues, and I think that has already helped him to rein in a very restless Ukrainian political elite and to prove that he still remains the president and he's likely to be so for the next 3 years or so until the next elections.
Do you think that he made some unfortunate steps? He closed down some pro-Russian media outlets. He slapped some sanctions and tried to arrest some pro-Russian oligarchs. And then he started this Crimea platform, which is supposed to keep international attention focused on the illegal annexation of the peninsula.
Yes, these steps for sure have frustrated the Kremlin. But I think the main reason behind the current escalation is not the frustration with Moscow's frustration with Crimean platform or something like that. I think the main reason is that both countries are frustrated by the stalemate in the negotiations. They have been disappointed in their sincere expectations because Zelensky had a lot of goodwill at the beginning, but he soon found out that Russia is not going to let him out so easily. While Russia is also frustrated by its inability to impose on Ukraine its own version, its own understanding of Minsk agreements. And Russia is also frustrated by the unwillingness of the West to push Ukraine into implementing Minsk agreements. So it's this mutual frustration was simmering for quite a long time, and now it bubbled up in the current escalation in Donbas.
What is the gap in the Minsk? I mean, don't go into detail about it because I don't think we want to get into the Minsk agreements. But what is the main stumbling point between the negotiations when they come to talk about why they can't resolve their differences in the East? Is it because Russia wants to have a federal system there with a veto over any changes in Ukraine, and Ukraine doesn't want that?
Yeah, basically that is the problem, that actually Ukraine sees itself as a victim of Russian aggression and sees no reason why to reward Russia with implementing Minsk agreements as Russia sees them. While Russia believes that President Poroshenko has signed Minsk agreements, so Ukraine is now bound to implement them no matter what. And neither side see any reasons to concede, yeah, because they each of them believe that they are right, yeah, that according to the general situation, they are right.
What about President Putin inside his own country? I mean, we talk about the Ukrainian leadership flailing about trying to get, you know, a national identity and national support. President Putin himself is suffering. The country is suffering under COVID. Putin, under various polling on things like corruption, has not done well in recent months. And he has Duma elections coming up later on this year. You know, whenever that happens, you see an invasion of Georgia or you see a conflict with Ukraine, that boosts his polling and his ratings. And that's a dangerous moment, isn't it?
I'd say this time it's unlikely to be the case because the Russian regime is quite confident of its position at home. There are no signs that they're nervous about their popularity. The upcoming parliamentary elections are, I'm quite sure that they are able to tackle them without any problems. They have adjusted the electoral laws so much over the past few years that they don't need mass mobilization to get the result they want. There are very easy administrative ways to get it. You don't need a war. Besides, I think that just the Russian regime has got kind of apprehensive about mobilizing the Russian population too much. That it's not that easy to control it. They have learned it by their own experience after 2014. And I don't see them trying to mobilize the population this way now. And what is the most important is that actually Russian society has also changed over the past years. Its appreciation of foreign policy successes has diminished. Now it's concentrated on domestic problems. And I'm pretty sure, and the opinion polls confirm that if you get a new war, it's absolutely not guaranteed that Russian society will rally around the flag and support his president in his new foreign policy adventure.
You know, there's two arguments here. I mean, actually, two would make it too easy, but let's, for the moment, just say that there's two. One is that, you know, I just talked to Konstantin Yeltsayev, who is the former ambassador to the EU for Ukraine, and he said Russia wants to reestablish the Soviet Union, wants to retake Ukraine and invade Ukraine, then it wants to cut up the Baltics again. You know, worst case scenario. And then there's what President Putin has said in the past, where he simply wants to protect the Russian-speaking populations that were stranded after the breakup of the former Soviet Union in the Baltics, in Ukraine, and that he feels some obligation to do that. Is the truth somewhere in the middle there, or how do you see it?
I'd say that Russia wants to have some neutral strategic depth around it. Yeah, Russia wants to have a belt of neutral countries between itself and NATO. And Russia has been working on this aim for quite a long time. Yeah, because we see protecting Russians, ethnic Russians outside Russian borders is very selective, you know, because Russia is not really anxious about ethnic Russians in Central Asia, for example, but it is right. Really anxious about ethnic Russians in the Baltic countries or Ukraine.
It's a hollow discussion.
Yeah, and Russia uses the issue of ethnic Russians and their rights only when it is facing a NATO perspective, a NATO enlarging closer to its borders. Yeah, so I think it's more about geopolitics and Russian military calculus than about the rights of ethnic Russians.
So if you were living in the Baltics, would you be worried?
No, because the Baltics are already a NATO member. Russia won't go voluntary to a war with NATO.
What do you think would happen if there's an escalation of the conflict with Ukraine and Russia? I mean, Ukraine says it is much more capable militarily than it was in 2014, but that's a far cry from challenging the armed forces of Russia.
That is probably true that the Ukrainian army is far more capable now than it was 5 years ago, but still it doesn't guarantee that it is capable of defeating Russia. Yeah, and yeah. I have strong doubts that Russia has not been wasting this time also, yeah? So Russia has conducted several wars over the past decade. You had a war in Georgia, you had a war in Syria, you had a war in Ukraine. So Russia has also gained, Russian army has also gained quite a lot of battle experience. And I have strong doubts that the Ukrainian army can hold on against the Russian one for a prolonged period of time.
So what would happen? What would be, how far would Russia go?
That's absolutely unclear, but I guess that occupying whole Ukraine is not on the agenda because you'll get a huge country with very hostile population and no clear understanding how to control the control it. Yeah. So, but I think the outcome of a potential war in Donbas is very difficult to predict, and it's very difficult to predict how far Russia would stop. I think a lot will depend on the behavior of other actors, like the United States or the West in general.
What about extending its territory along the Black Sea and taking Odessa, for instance?
It may be a byproduct, but I don't think that Russia is determined to execute this. That Russia has currently has a plan, and it is like default option for Russia to create to conquer the Black Sea coast and to conquer Odessa. I think Russia is not that ambitious at the moment.
Last question, Maxime. You think then it really depends on what the West does, and the EU doesn't do much of anything anyway. So it really depends on what President Biden does. So you would, you wouldn't advise him, because I know that's not your role, but you would suggest if the United States has to step carefully, that if they escalate this or they get behind Ukraine too much, that can really, really cause a much wider conflict.
Yeah, I think Russia is watching the United States behavior at the moment very closely. And there are options radical options won't do any good. Yeah, that if the United States just forget about Ukraine, it may provoke Russia into attack. But if the United States are too active in their support, if the United States, for example, move their military to Ukraine, this is likely to be a red flag for the Kremlin, and the consequences may be very grave.
Maxime Soryakov at the Carnegie Center in Moscow. Great to talk to you, Maxime, and thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Konstantin Yeltsayev is the former ambassador to the EU and was the advisor to Ukrainian president, the former Ukrainian president Poroshenko. Welcome, Konstantin.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mr. Ambassador, the press secretary of the Russian president, Dmitry Peskov, said over the weekend that Russia does not pose any threat to any country in the world, including Ukraine. What's your reaction to that?
This is complete lie. This is complete fake information. And we know that what Russia is saying in practice, this is vice versa. So it means that really Russia is trying to escalate situation, namely around the borders with Ukraine. And the real goal of Russia is not only, for example, to invade to the east of my country, but to grab the whole territory of Ukraine in order to build a new Soviet Union empire.
To build a new Soviet Union empire and to invade the country. You seem to have no doubt what their intentions are.
Yes, the intention, firstly, just trying to escalate the situation, trying to provoke certain instability. Maybe they're waiting for a provocation from Ukrainian, for example, armed forces, and to use this as a pretext to have a new invasion to the Ukrainian territory. Why I'm talking about new invasion? Because currently Ukraine already, Russia invaded the territory of Ukraine, you know, since 2014. Russian armed forces invaded the territory of, firstly, Crimea. This is southern part of Ukraine. And in couple of months, they invaded the territory of Donbas. And currently in Donbas, we have Russian occupational troops.
I've read a lot of analysis. I was based in Moscow for 12 years as a correspondent myself. I've come to the conclusion that most of us who think that we know what Russia is up to are deeply confused right now, and we have no idea what their intentions are. And it was the same around the time of the invasion of Crimea. Nobody actually thought that the Russians would do it. So why, if you believe they're about to invade now, what is the timing? Why would they suddenly do it now?
You are quite right. You know, even there is a famous Russian proverb that it's always difficult to grasp and to understand the Russian's mind and what is in the Russian mind. So why it's going, it's developing right now? In my view, there are three key reasons. Number one, the global reason. This is with the new American administration. Russia is trying to invite the President Biden for global deals. And with the new American administration, now we see the kind of confrontation between Moscow and Washington. And the apogeo of this confrontation was the phrase by President Biden that Putin is a killer. And of course, Russia would like to raise stakes again to invite and to have a global deal with the United States. And you know what? Why I'm talking about global deal? I'm talking not about Ukraine, but I'm talking about the division of spheres of influence. Why Russia is trying to escalate the security situation? Yeah, the second one is the regional one. Which is dealing with the preparation of both of Germany and France for the upcoming elections. In Germany, for the parliamentary elections in September this year, and in France for the presidential elections next year. And of course, Russia would like to use this electoral period in order to promote Russian agenda, in order to influence on the situation in Ukraine. And of course, both leaders of Germany and France, they're interested in stabilization of the political and military situation in and around Ukraine. Third reason is, of course, internal situation in Russia. You know that Russia is preparing for the parliamentary elections as well. And of course, Putin needs to mobilize its electorate and needs to mobilize popular support, because currently the level of support is downing. And in accordance with the latest opinion poll, only 27% of Russian citizens are ready to support Putin. 27% support. This is very low level of support. These three reasons why there is escalation of the situation right now.
You talked about the third reason being Putin's popularity inside Russia and the Duma elections, the parliamentary elections later on this year. The Levada Center in Russia, notes that Putin's monthly approval rating catapulted from an average of 65%, and those numbers are often overstated, but 65% in 2012 and 2013 to 81% in 2014 to 2018 after they invaded the Crimea. So you can't understate the rewards he gets from sort of reclaiming the near afar and Russia's so-called sphere of influence. Even though you put it as the third reason, do you suspect that, this so-called patriotic mobilization, as the Russians call it, may in fact be the first reason here, that Putin is struggling for some kind of cause célèbre, some kind of reason for Russia being?
No, all reasons are valid, and I wouldn't underline what is more important, internal, global, or regional. Also, we should keep in mind that currently all leaders of the world are struggling against COVID-19, and all efforts are concentrated in order to get vaccine. And of course, Putin is also using this situation as well. Even I would call it that Putin is using kind of vaccine diplomacy in order to promote Russia interest, the famous Sputnik vaccine,
yes,
and which is becoming the as a kind of a Trojan horse, for example, in some European Union countries, like in Germany. Probably you know that the region of Bavaria now is considering the idea to sign a deal with Russia in order to get Sputnik vaccine. So all these reasons are valid, but now we need to talk what to do in this situation, how to de-escalate the situation, and how to show to Putin that we cannot allow him to provoke instability and to try to threaten to the security of the whole world.
You cannot allow, but how can you stop it? A lot of people would say, because Russia obviously is the Goliath against the David here. They have overwhelming military superiority. Could Ukraine do anything if regular Russian forces suddenly pushed north from the Crimea and pushed further into eastern Ukraine?
No, first of all, we are not living in the isolated world, and Putin understands it. Putin understands that he cannot just simply send his troops to the Ukrainian territory and he will be a winner, because everybody understands that behind Ukraine there is a, I would say, a pro-European international coalition, which, by the way, was created since the year 2014 when Russia decided to invade and to occupy Crimea. What is very important that we need to strengthen so-called Euro-Atlantic coalition. I mean, US need to reinforce its military, political, economic ties with the European Union, which is currently going on. And Putin is not very happy, because he was very happy with the policy of President Trump when de facto the EU and the United States were confronted between each other. So, number one, the strengthening of the Euro-Atlantic coalition, which is good. And I see that President Biden is doing his best in order to strengthen. And the only fact that Secretary of State Blinken is visiting for the second time Brussels within the very limited period of time is a self-evident example.
But a lot of people a lot of people don't think the EU would do anything. That the EU.
You are right. Because unfortunately, let's state it frankly. Unfortunately, the Russian Federation does not recognize EU as a political and military player in the continent. This is very unfortunate. That's why I'm talking about Euro-Atlantic coalition. That's why I'm talking about the United States leadership, and this leadership must be strengthened. And of course, this is the first important factor. Second factor, this is the strength of Ukraine, the strength of its armed forces, and of course, internal strength of Ukraine, namely the progress in terms of reform, progress in terms of fighting against corruption. This is also would be important. And in my view, this is the high time for the international community to show a real strategic vision and to take some decisive geopolitical decision, which of course require political bravery.
If you were to pour any
yes, please.
Gasoline on the fire, as far as the Russians are concerned, all you have to do is say Ukraine wants to join NATO. And that's exactly what President Zelensky has said. Do you think that's a wise thing to do? Do you think that's a dangerous thing to call for?
I would concentrate, Jose, on the importance to reinvigorate cooperation between Ukraine and its allies, namely the United States, the UK, Canada, some European Union nations, with a view to strengthen military and defense capability of Ukraine. So we need to reinvigorate military and technical cooperation with Ukraine. This is, in my view, very important, because you know that since 2014, Ukrainians managed to create one of the strongest armed forces in Europe. And in accordance with the different opinion polls, we currently in top 10 among European armed forces. So that's why Putin understands that what kind of price he would need to pay if he decides to have a new invasion to Ukrainian territory. Secondly, in my view, the West leaders need to clearly underline what kind of price Russia would pay if they will invade to Ukrainian territory. And they need to clearly formulate this price, which would include, of course, for example, to switch off SWIFT system, for Russia, which would include, for example, reintroduction of more severe both economic and sectoral sanctions.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what SWIFT payments, if I can interrupt, a lot of people don't know what SWIFT payments are, but essentially that allows international banking. And if the West were to close down SWIFT payments, the banking system of Russia would collapse.
Right. Which would include, for example, to stop buying Russian energy resources from the Russian territory, namely oil and gas. And of course, which would include to stop construction of the Nord Stream 2. And of course, in my view, I do believe strongly that the providing Ukraine with the membership action plan regarding future membership in NATO would be the most severe sanctions against Putin. And why Putin is so sensitive vis-a-vis this question? Because he is afraid of Ukraine being a full-fledged member of NATO. It doesn't mean it will happen today or tomorrow, but at least to provide Ukraine with a membership action plan, which means a clear-cut perspective in the future to be a member of NATO, in my view, would be a clear-cut signal to Putin that the West is very serious about supporting Ukraine. Also, another point would be very important for Ukraine. For example, to provide Ukraine with a clear European Union membership perspective. Because as of now, we don't have a clear-cut EU membership perspective. Despite the fact we are having a EU-Ukraine association agreement, we don't have a clear, full-fledged perspective. It will be also a clear-cut message to Putin. This is also, I consider, a big sanction against Putin. And we must not be afraid, because for Ukraine, there's nothing to lose. Russia has already invaded Ukrainian territory. They grab about 7% of Ukrainian territory. So the situation is already very bad. So that's why those who are telling that if Ukraine will get membership perspective for NATO, it will only increase appetite in Russia. This is completely untrue. I don't accept this argument.
Do you blame President Zelensky for any of this? Because people say that he has provoked Putin by arresting and seizing some of the assets of oligarchs, especially those who are friends with Putin, that he has cut off Russian language television channels that Moscow was trying to influence inside Ukraine, that there was a cut to water in the Crimea, which some people debate whether there was or there wasn't. But a lot of people say that Zelensky himself, you talk about Putin struggling for popularity. He is struggling for popularity internally. He has problems with his handling of the COVID situation, the dire economic situation in Ukraine. And some people say that President Zelensky is stirring this problem with Russia as a diversion.
I don't think that, for example, the fact that President Zelensky decided, for example, to impose sanctions against one of the Ukrainian oligarchs, Mr. Medvedchuk, and to close some of his media assets was the important factor of the escalation of the situation across the Ukrainian-Russian border. This is not completely true. But I agree with the fact that what is going right now, this is the result of the, in my view, mistaken Zelensky policy with regard to bring back peace, for example, to in Donbas. The only fact that Zelensky wanted to see in the eyes of Putin peace, the only fact that Zelensky all the time was trying to meet with Putin and promised to have a quick peace in Ukraine, and for that it would be enough to stop shooting. Of course, it's also created, in my view, false expectations about possible peace, and this policy only increased appetite in Moscow, in Kremlin, in order to continue its invasion in Ukraine.
A lot of people would say that President Zelensky was naive when he came to power because he promised voters in Ukraine he could solve the problem and that he would stop the war. And voters themselves inside Ukraine may have been naive in voting for Zelensky, because nobody thinks that this situation is simple, and that probably it is in the Kremlin's best interest, they think, to keep stirring conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And this is not about presidential personality.
Kremlin and Putin, they wanted that, of course, President Zelensky would be re-elected as a president. They hated the idea of President Poroshenko to be re-elected for the second term, because they understood that they cannot get any deal with Poroshenko at the detriment of national interests of Ukraine. And of course, the first year of President Zelensky's presidency was very promising for Kremlin. First of all, President Zelensky decided to go along the Russian scenario of implementation of Minsk arrangements in Donbas. President Zelensky agreed with some, he made some concessions vis-a-vis Kremlin. It was intentionally or unintentionally, but Zelensky firstly showed that really he wanted peace, and he even was ready to go for any other concessions. And Putin liked it very much. That's why in December 2019, the Normandy summit in Paris took place. But when Putin started its aggressive policy, they continue the promotion of its aggressive rhetoric, killing Ukrainian people, Ukrainian citizens. Of course, Zelensky understood that the real goal of Putin was and is to invade the whole Ukraine and to build a new Soviet Union. That is why, of course, currently Putin is trying to escalate the situation in order to press on Zelensky, and that Zelensky made some concessions in implementing Minsk agreement and to grant autonomous status to two small areas in the western part, in the eastern part of Ukraine, currently occupied by the Russian occupational troops.
My last question: if you believe that Putin wants to restore the Soviet Union and really wants to invade Ukraine, then what do you fear for other countries like the Baltics, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia?
Of course, everybody is afraid of Putin's neo-imperialistic policy. Of course, Putin's main strategic and geopolitical goal to have new Soviet Union and Ukraine as a part of the new Soviet Union empire. Everybody understands, including Putin, that without Ukraine, he cannot create a second edition of the Soviet Union. That is why, and that Ukraine is a big fish in this geopolitical game. That is why now he invaded Ukraine. He occupied part of the territory of Ukraine. And of course, all neighboring countries, including Baltic states and Poland, are very much afraid. That is why they do understand what are the real plans of Putin. That is why they clearly support, for example, the European Union membership of Ukraine. They clearly support NATO membership of Ukraine. But the big problem is, unfortunately, there is no unified and consolidated position in the European Union itself, because the European Union is splitted regarding the future perspective for Ukraine. And why the European Union is splitted? Because there is a clear cut creative policy of the Russian Federation, who are trying to use energy, economic tools in order not to allow the European Union to reach consensus on the future of Ukraine inside the European Union. So I do hope very much that sooner or later the whole world would understand what are the real plans for Russia, and will finally understand that they need to do in a strategic manner, mainly in supporting one of the biggest country in Europe, which is Ukraine.
Ambassador Konstantin Yeltsayev, sir, thank you so much for your time.
And that's our backstory on Ukraine this week. Please subscribe to our newsletter, danalewis.substack.com, for regular international news that is delivered to your email, danalewis.substack.com. And if you can share this podcast and help us grow, that's great. Thanks for listening. I'm Dana Lewis, and I'll talk to you again soon.